Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is the former business development manager of UTest, community advocate, and a serial social entrepreneur. Back in 2014, she came up with this idea to build a platform to empower community managers around the world. Needing help with the tech side, though, of things, she began a quest for a tech co-founder, which she found, and they began planning, raising money, and building. Today, Mobilize serves as an online hub for over 1,000 communities and 1 million members. Now, let's hack. Sharon Savariego. As a customer, I get so frustrated when I call a company's support line and I have to explain my issue over and over to several different reps before I feel heard. As a business owner, I refuse to do this to my customers, and you should too. If you're anything like me, you don't have time to waste on the phone, and well, neither do your customer service or salespeople. Imagine if your support team could accurately anticipate customer issues without making them repeat themselves. You can do that with AirCall. AirCall is a 100% cloud-based phone system that has helped thousands of sales and support teams stop wasting time on the phone. AirCall integrates with popular CRM, help desk, e-commerce, and other business software to help your team understand and log vital customer and prospect information on every call. AirCall was built to help you give better service and to make more sales. And better yet, you can get set up with a no-risk 7-day free trial of AirCall in less than 3 minutes. No credit card needed. Simply visit aircall.io/hack to access your 7-day free trial of AirCall and make your team's phone calls as efficient as possible. Since day one, I've always had one goal with this show, and that's to help you make your business better, make it faster, make it more profitable. And as someone who's self-employed, I also know that if you're not using Intuit QuickBooks for your financial management needs, you should be, because it will save you time, it'll save you money, and most of all, it'll save you the headaches that you're dealing with right now. Intuit QuickBooks is a hub for your business. You can manage your entire workflow from the first estimate to the final payment using Intuit QuickBooks. It's simple to use. You can work smarter, not harder, thanks to how easy it is to use Intuit QuickBooks because it's a one-stop shop. You don't have to learn how to use thousands of tools and software. Intuit QuickBooks does it all. It can even save you money. Intuit QuickBooks customers find an average tax savings of over $4,500 per year. To see how much you can save and to discover smarter business tools, go to intuit.me/hack. That's intuit.me/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to be a lot of fun, so I'm excited to get into it. Should we do it?
Let's get started.
Excellent. Sharon, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, there is actually one word to describe it. It's communities. Since the day I started, everything I do, I always try to have an element of community behind it. And as an entrepreneur from day one, when we just had an idea, the first thing that we've done is created a community of people to give us feedback on that idea and to really criticize it very harshly or support it very strongly, as long as they're being honest and really showing us like if what we're doing is right or wrong. We had that community with us from day one. Later on, when we actually built the product, then we had the early adopters community, then we had our customer community, and then now we're working on our brand ambassador community. So at every given point, we really, when we think about our next challenge and our next step as a company, we always kind of like go first and look at how we can build a community to support it. And I think that that's pretty unique, and it's kind of like my approach to entrepreneurship. And it's been impactful, like so much, so impactful since day one.
Which makes sense. Mobilize is, I mean, it allows people to build communities, right? I mean, it's an online home for 1,000 or more communities at this point and over 1 million people. But you've been running Mobilize for almost 4 years. Is this community aspect that you have, is this sort of within you that you've always had? Or is it something you've come up with and determined now as your business sort of pushes in that direction?
No. So yeah, I started and I became an entrepreneur because of my passion for community. So I started my professional journey as a community leader for a social and political organization. I've built delegations. I've been participating as a human rights activist and running communities, including some really funny stories about some of our activism and like activities that we had. And that led me, that basically is the core of who I am, is a community builder. And I'm really passionate about what people can achieve when they work together. And I always seen that like outside of the realm of an internal team. I always saw like the power of 150 students that came from all around the world to protest for human rights and what we were able to achieve. But together we'd seen kind of like what we can achieve. I also saw the technological challenges that we had and how challenging was it to actually stay in touch and collaborate. So that's kind of like where I started, with that passion, with that understanding of the impact of a big group of people working together. Then later on, I joined a shared economy, one of actually the first crowdsourcing companies called Applause. And I've seen the power of community within that shared economy company. I've seen like what it means when they have half a million QA testers working from all around the world to help provide the service. And that kind of like led me into a conclusion of, okay, communities are now not only in the realm of nonprofits and social impact, it's really important for businesses too, and is just growing in importance. So that's kind of like where I kind of connected all the dots and understood that I have something that I can bring to this world, which is building a tech solution, a software that can empower all these community leaders and their members.
So you saw like a gap sort of in the marketplace.
Yes, it was a pretty painful one. The tools that we had were everything from a spreadsheet to try to track who are all the people within our community. It was usually connected to like a Google form or any survey or something like that to attract and recruit everyone. And then you had a Google group, a mailing list, Yahoo group, or a Facebook group to try to kind of like communicate with everyone real time or to share updates. And it was so clunky, and we always ended up losing stuff and losing people. That was the most painful thing about it. Like all these tools like just didn't work together nicely and kind of like disempowered you. And then like I was like working in a tech company at the time, and I saw like Yammer getting started. And I saw Salesforce and Marketo and all these like fancy sales and marketing tools and collaboration tools. And I kind of knew that if we tweak all of these solutions, then we're able, like we can create something for communities because they have a unique workflow and unique dynamics in terms of communication. So I just wanted to get rid of all of these like clunky tools and give us like some fancy software that could actually empower us.
Fair enough. And then the real sort of social side of it, it seems you have, and like the not-for-profit sort of side. Not that you are not-for-profit, which I don't think you are.
No.
But you come from that space, right? And it seems like you work within that. I think the UN and stuff has like used you in ways, and that's fascinating to me. And it's like Salesforce is not at all for that market in any way. But when you came up with this idea, you saw sort of this missing part in the market. You had worked with communities, but there wasn't the technological sort of thing to fit this these communities. Like, what was your next step at that point?
So since I'm not an engineer, I really had to just find a technological co-founder. So that was the first step. And it's not always easy to find a tech co-founder. Usually the challenge there, and especially when where I started, I did came from, I'm originally Israeli, and I did came from an army unit that was technological. So I did understand technology, and I did have friends that are kind of like engineers, but none of them as entrepreneurs said like, oh, communities, that sounds really sexy, of course. No, none of them said that. It was really outside of like everyone's concept and word. Like, you know, at that time, especially like the hype technologies at that time were truly like all about ed tech or shared economy and all that. So I had to find a technological co-founder that can really understand the vision and be part of it. And the funny thing is that my co-founder, which is our CTO, he doesn't have like any background in communities, but what he did is that he truly believed in our relationship and in our ability, like in our own skill set, like what our collaboration would look like. And he kind of like disembarked us on a journey of going and talking to all these communities and community leaders, understanding their pain points, truly looking into the competitive landscape, understanding what they offer, where we innovative. And that helped us, first of all, like shape our vision and clarify it, but also create a shared common, like a common ground for both of us to work on it. So it kind of like was a 4 months process of taking my ideas and vision into a place which is our idea and our vision, empowered and supported by all of the different community leaders that we met and gave us their feedback. So that was kind of like the first step, very painful, but it's the most empowering one. Yeah.
And necessary, right? Like that's what makes, like you have the initial idea, but bringing in a co-founder, which I believe is Arthur.
Yes.
As the CTO, because you don't know the technical side, but then also using that different mindset to make the idea and the concept even stronger.
Yes, it was so critical. And till today, like Arthur Viner, our CTO, we have this bond that like is really critical. Like if you think about the fact that we're leading a segmented company, like we have our headquarters here in San Francisco and our product and dev team in Israel, we wouldn't be able to do that if we weren't like that close and we had that kind of like first boost, like just the two of us. That's what makes like the mind melting kind of like moment in which like we can work now. He's in Israel, I'm here in San Francisco, and we can still like make things happen and empower the entire team.
So at the time when this started, you were both in separate cities too and countries?
No, we actually started when I was in Israel too. And then we joined an accelerator here in San Francisco. We brought the first engineer, and we just came all three of us here for 4 months and started meeting community leaders here, started meeting investors, and ended up within 2 months, like with our seed funding closed. So that was empowering. And since then I stayed.
Wow.
I stayed here. Yeah.
I love it. So the idea to really, as the CEO of something that didn't exist yet, but you had to make your first big sale to a co-founder who could bring up that side of the business. And then did you sort of, after the accelerator, after funding, did you lead sales initially?
Yes. The first thing I needed to do here was actually to find my American co-founder, kind of like I needed to find someone that can actually truly understand the culture here in the Bay Area that could lead. We called it then business development, but truly our first employee here was like Jane of all trades. She was doing sales, customer success, support, some marketing, and helping us move offices. Like everything that we needed to do, we just did together. And that was critical also for recruiting people here, for understanding the culture, for getting the first like entry point to different companies. Like we recruited her within, I believe, 3 months that we kind of decided to move here. And like already in the first month, we got like the first meetings with Uber, just to kind of like get their thoughts, and they ended up being a pilot. Google, Microsoft, like we all of a sudden, like doors just started opening here in the Bay Area because we had the right person here as well. And that, like, again, it usually comes to, like, goes back all the time to the people that we have. So that was my second step. Like once we got my third step, once we got like the team in Israel and we got our seed funding, it was the team here.
So the team there, and then from there develop the product out with feedback from companies that can test it, and then launch out sales, I guess?
Actually, we're pretty rare. It took us a year and maybe even a year and a half to start charging for the product. It took us also about a year and a half to open our product for anyone that wants to use it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like only in hindsight you know if it's a good idea or a bad idea. But
yeah.
But what we felt is that the market is new. The market is just getting started. Everyone that talked about communities at that time was really thinking about support communities. So people would compare us to Jive and Lithium and User Voice and all these like support forums. They're amazing products, but didn't serve the market that we were actually going after. So we needed to reinvent ourselves, and we knew that we were building something different. So we didn't want to get distracted by the amount of inbound and interest that we got, and to get any customer, like to get anyone to tell us what they think about the product, because we really care about what customers and users tell us. We use Intercom, we have our own communities on Mobilize. Like every feedback, we take it so personally. Like we're still like, we really grew. We had our Series A, like we brought in a lot of people. We have 1,000 communities on the platform, but still like I read, and my co-founder and everyone almost on the team reads every feedback that we get. And that takes a lot of time. So when we just got started, we wanted to make sure that we're bringing in into our beta only the ones that like reflect our target market and that are early adopters, and that we gave them also so much attention. Like we actually had like this CEO product process in which I met with the top customers every month, and I had a spreadsheet with all of their ideas and needs, and we would prioritize. So we really were very close to them, and we started charging. So we started basically with a community of early adopters. They were using it as pilots. And then only after like a year, we shared with them the pricing, and they all converted into paying customers, which was a really amazing moment, because all of them also immediately converted into annual deals because they were already with us. They already loved the product. And just after our Series A, actually a few months after our Series A, we opened the platform for everyone. We actually said, okay, we're now like open for the public.
Wow. So at the beginning of that, you said that looking back, sometimes you know whether it's a good idea or a bad idea what you did. So if you were starting today from scratch back in America with your team as around you, would you start the same direction, do you think, or do you see it differently now?
I think I might have shortened it. So maybe I wouldn't wait that long to get started on the self-service and to get started on the pricing, because it takes time to optimize. And in hindsight, like you do want everything to become more self-service and more low touch, but you never know. Like what we know today about our market is a lot thanks to that process of working closely with like these couple of hundreds of first pilots.
Yeah. And I mean, looking at your pricing now, and I think it's free up to 500 members forever.
So yes, it is.
Is that kind of like the idea where you had all these people beta testing for a year, year and a half, and then when you switched them to paid, they all went for it because they were fully like activated, or like
yes,
they were so into your product at that point?
Yes.
Is that what this first 500 is? Like you get people hooked?
No, and we're actually about to launch a new pricing. So we're about to increase our freemium offering. And the reality behind it is that knowing the market and knowing our customers, sometimes community leaders are not sponsored. They're not backed by a company. Like we have like Microsoft running a community on Mobilize. Like they have funds, right? Like that's a business initiative that they're running. Some community leaders, like one of my favorite example is like, we have a community that's with us for like, I think 3.5 years. They are called Moncton Stargazers. It's basically an observatory in UK, somewhere in UK. I really want to visit there. And they have a community of like 500 stargazers. And they aren't mobilized from almost day one. They can't afford to pay us. And I'm so happy to empower them. I wouldn't want to take that away from them. And that's the reality of community leaders. Like, you start a movement. At the beginning, you're not sponsored. You maybe are not charging membership fees. You don't have like events that you can charge for. You don't have the money at the beginning. But you're still like a super critical part of our market and the persona that we want to empower. We know that with time, if people get more professional, if they need more features, if they want branding, they can go and start paying. And we see them doing that all the time. But we want to empower them, and we also don't want to scare them. Like, we don't want them to think, oh, maybe in a few months from now, I can't afford it anymore. No, like, you have us for as long as you need us.
I love that. I love that. And I mean, in that example, I mean, who's to say what those 500 users, like what companies they work for or own, any of those people that could also use Mobilize as a customer?
Yes, that is a strong element for us. We have amazing, what we call like site switching effect. Members go and they become part of a community because someone invited them, and they see Mobilize, and then they basically say, oh, I also have a community. I can start using it myself. It usually happens actually with paying customers more than with the freemiums. We got like the day Docker launched, like we got, I think, 20 new community developer communities running on Mobilize, like just because they exposed it to developer community managers. And we see that all the time. When Maker Faire got started, they got started with their headquarters, and all of a sudden all the different Maker Faire organizers around the world were like, oh, I need this for my small community. And obviously their small community can't afford it like the Maker Faire headquarters can. So we did two things. We obviously have the freemium, but we also gave them a package that is like a discount for their own members. So that's those are things we're testing and we're trying to be better at, but it's a work in progress.
Right. And this leads us nicely, because we started talking about the pricing change, which this could be it, but projects. And projects is a loose term, Sharon. It could be deciding to completely change your pricing structure, or it could be somewhere you want the product to go. And you said that you and your co-founder read all feedback and you take it really seriously. So I would love to know what your process is as the CEO, but also as a company, and if it's a written or gut process. But what is the process from sifting through all of these ideas and distilling it down to decide that, yes, this project is worth mine and my team's time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, we have a pretty robust process. And the way that we look at it is that we start, first of all, from ideation. So, for example, once we decide what is the target market, like the vertical, like communities, obviously, is a very, very, very broad market. So we've kind of went through a really massive crossing the chasm research. We analyzed about 19 community types and tried to understand what's the whole product that they need and workflow. Once we picked our first niche market, then what we've done is that we understood the whole product. We had an ideation around like what actually are all the features that are missing or needed to be optimized on Mobilize in order to support that vertical. And then we looked at competitors, we understood also like the competitive landscape, what's out there, what others are missing, what others have that is amazing, what are the complementary tools. And we really started listing all of those. Once we listed it, we add a few other prioritization metrics. So first of all, we look at how much could it impact like the compelling reason to buy. So we know that like each vertical has a few key compelling reasons to buy. So a moment in which the manager would say, oh my God, like they have those three things, like this is exactly what I need, and now I'm buying it. So we look at those compelling reasons to buy, and we prioritize how much each one of the ideas rank in terms of impacting that compelling reasons to buy. We obviously have also prioritization in terms of like what is the most important compelling reasons to buy and what's number two or three. Then we add to it what we call, and actually this is something that Intercom talks a lot about, the RICE prioritization, which is reach, impact, effort, and confidence. So how much, like what do we believe that will be the impact? How much effort does it require? Are we confident that that will have that impact and effort? And what's the reach? Like, how many people within our community, our own customers or new customers would be impacted? And last, it is a robust process. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that we do is we add all of the pirate metrics, activation, retention, referral, et cetera, acquisition. I'm saying it in the wrong order, but you know what I'm talking about. We add all of these pirate metrics and we also rank how much would it impact. So for example, if we're now all about like self-service, like we were like once we did our Series A year ago, then we prioritize mainly all the stuff that like are important for the compelling reasons to buy, but are also that are critical for activation and for acquisition. Just later, like for example, we really right now, like we still are not prioritizing referrals. We do some stuff here and there, but like we are not there. Like we don't try to always growth hack in that perspective. We really try more to give more value still to just add more value to make sure that the process is and the workflow is good. So that's what we do. We, as I said, like we're all about communities. So we have two things that are happening. We don't do that on our own, this process. What we do is that we have two communities that are critical. One is our internal team. And when I'm talking about the internal team, I'm talking about everyone, not just like two or three people that are leading the product. And by the way, it took us time to get better at it. At the beginning, it was like mainly me and my co-founder and maybe the head of product, but with time, we understood it like we need to involve everyone. So we have on Mobilize a group that's called Product Town Hall, and we share there the metrics, we share there the ideas, the epics, the main stuff that we want to do. We have weekly meetings, and we also, once we decide what is the epic or theme that we focus on, then we basically all throw ideas and prioritize them together. So that's the internal community, product community that we have. And then obviously the external product community, we have our Mobilize champions on Mobilize, and we communicate with them, not as regularly as I would want to do, but still we're a startup. So, but we do communicate with them, asking them what they really need, what are the features. If we launch, for example, we launched the iOS, we're launching soon the Android, like next month. We actually have like beta communities on Mobilize. They give us feedback, like they actually share like screenshots. This is not working. This is working. I like this. Or ideas, that they, stuff that they want. And we just work with all of them to really prioritize.
That's awesome. And you're right. It is a super robust process that it's rigorous and it probably works really, really well. It probably like makes you not just make rash decisions based on emotion or something and that aren't worth the time. But is that sort of a process, that robust of a process, Sharon? Like, did that start out as a really simple process or did you adopt this process from somebody else?
I think that over time you develop it. You can't just jump into such a process to begin with, because then, by the way, it will also be like very lengthy and would take a lot of time. And we're a startup where we believe that we are agile, and we are, by the way, like we are working very fast. But if we adopted this process from day one, I don't think that we were able to do that in a quick way. Now it's part of the process. So like, while like this sprint is running and being tested, like we already know what's going on, like for next sprint, and we can like in a really quick way adapt. So it does take time to build this, because otherwise you would just be caught up in the process, and we don't love to be caught in the process. We can't afford that. What happened is that at the beginning was a lot of gut feeling, a lot of talking with potential customers, as I said, like the first, before we even wrote one line of code, we talked with 40 community leaders all around the world. Like we even got to like the Vatican at one point. It was really funny. Like we got everyone's feedback and it was really good. And then we prioritized. Later on, we added like stuff like, okay, the pirate metrics. And later on, we added the RISE model. And only recently, we actually added the compelling reasons to buy, because we understood that there are way too many verticals that we are trying to approach. So it's a work in progress. And I think that it's healthy to always try to learn other ways to prioritize. And just when you're very confident about your gut feeling, then you can validate it with prioritization, or not validate it, or disqualify it. But you need to have this good balance. And as long as you're running fast, you can afford like that robust process.
I love it. I love it. All right, Sharon. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I do want to wrap up on one final question, if I could, for you.
Yeah.
It really ties into this idea of, I mean, it is a work in progress, right? Everything you're building, everything you're doing is a work in progress. And something I've noticed talking to 400 entrepreneurs now is that we oftentimes are always projecting our own personal and our company's success into the future, meaning that in 3 months, when you hit that certain metric, whether it's revenue or acquisition or something, in 6 months, when you stand on that stage, whatever it is you happen to set for yourself and for your team, feels like seconds before we hit that, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future. I agree we need to always be looking ahead, but for right now, I would love it if you could stop and turn around and look behind you, because you had a really interesting and fascinating career before this, and now you spent almost 4 years building out a really, really interesting company. So rather than look ahead, I would love if you could just tell me, how do you feel about the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses of everything you've accomplished up until today?
That's a fun question and challenging. I feel good about it. I feel that it's a really long journey. It's nothing I could have expected. Nothing. Like, no step, like, was something that I could forecast. But you learn so much as an entrepreneur. You learn so much as an individual. And if you really have the right community and the right people to support you, then it becomes like a fun process as well. So I'm very proud of what we've done, like at what our team has done, at the people that we're empowering. That's what really keeps me running. Like, even when we hit like the lows or the highs, like, it's always all about, like, I try to look at like, who are the people, what are the communities that we're empowering, what are they doing, what is their impact on the world? And that's what keeps us running, because that's what keeps all of us running and thinking about, like, how can we empower them? And when we see their success, is just, that's fuel for months to go. So I'm very proud, and I'm very proud, especially in my team.
I love it. Beautiful answer. So we've got to talk about Mobilize sort of in passing throughout this conversation, Sharon, but could you now specifically tell the listener who it's for and what it can do for them?
Yeah, of course. So Mobilize is a community management platform, and we love to call it the home of your online, your community. No matter if it's online or offline, you finally can have like one place online to manage and bring people together. On the technical side, like very functional, like what it gives you is all the tools you need to run your community. It basically includes a community CRM, so a database, so you can see all of your members and see their profiles and data and have registration forms. It includes a full communication and outreach center with email blasts and text messages and meeting invites, so you can coordinate and organize masses. So truly, like, we have like tens of thousands of people that are being coordinated and like managed and mobilized on Mobilize. And then you have a social lounge, which is the area in which your members can meet each other, talk to each other, like find, like have awesome conversations. And I usually like to say, like, it's like imagining opening a door to an exclusive event, walking into a lounge full of like-minded people, having mind-blowing conversations. So that's what we love, like, to say about Mobilize. And we do believe in this combination of empowering the members and giving them a space, together with giving the manager a place to organize and communicate easily. So it's really just best of both worlds. And we empower communities from all over the world, including professional networks. So for example, John, I don't know where you're running this 400 entrepreneurs community, but we should talk about that. I would love access to those entrepreneurs to learn from them. We work with brand ambassador communities, developer communities, like social movements, like Indivisible. And we basically have like a really amazing variety of customers from Microsoft in the United Nations all the way to Etsy, Meetup, Prezi, and Moncton Stargazers that I mentioned before. So yeah, that's what we do. We empower community leaders.
Awesome. And you can track it down at mobilize.io, as well as Sharon is on LinkedIn and quite active on Twitter. So I will link to those, all of that, in the show notes on Hack the Entrepreneur for you. So it's there whenever you get it back to your computer or get over to it on your phone. You can track it down there. And I'm sure Sharon would love to hear from you on Twitter or answer any of your questions.
Sharon, yes, I will.
Yeah. Once again, thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. I really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, John. And same for you. Keep doing what you're doing. It was great talking to you today.
That was a lot of fun. And I know. You're probably thinking, you say that all the time, John, or you say that a lot of the time, John. And I do. And I do this because it is fun and because it provides some sort of value to you. But also, sometimes the conversations are sort of above and beyond. And it was my introduction to Sharon happened last week. My introduction to Mobilize happened just a couple days ago as I was doing my research for the conversation. And this conversation, although I expected it to go well, it went even better than I had anticipated. And I absolutely love when that happens, when it just feels like we sort of make a connection within that sort of half an hour and can go some interesting places that I hope you feel and I hope you enjoy as well. So having a conversation like that is one of the driving reasons why I can continue to do the show, because I love that feeling and I love having those conversations. But you know what part I also love? It's going back through the conversation and listening as a third person, as you get to listen, and searching for something that Sharon said. So I went back and I found it. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
So first of all, we look at how much could it impact, like the compelling reason to buy. So we know that like each vertical has a few key compelling reasons to buy. So a moment in which the manager would say, oh my God, like they have those three things. Like this is exactly what I need. And now I'm buying it.
And that's the hack. Sharon. This is awesome. Compelling reasons to buy. I've actually never heard it said in this way, and it's very eloquently said, and it really hits home. So this was in the context of how do you decide on new projects within Mobilize, within the company now? And it was sort of creating this hierarchy of ideas and then prioritizing them based on how they affect compelling reasons to buy. This can also be used at the very beginning, at sort of the ideation stage of a business, of a service, of a product, of software. It doesn't matter what you want to create. But use this idea that Sharon and Mobilize now use. With a million users now, they've understand compelling reasons to buy. Picture your ideal customer. Sharon says, think of the manager, right? The community manager sitting there looking and being like, sees three things and being like, wow, they have those three things. Let's buy it. Those are the compelling reasons to buy. Not sort of features that you think are cool, features that you think are awesome and should be there, but the compelling reasons why your customer will buy. It really doesn't get any more simple than that. I like how she mentioned three, because three is a good number to sort of think about. Like you can't have one compelling reason to buy. You could obviously have 5 or 10 or 15 or 20, but think about those top three. Whenever it is, if you're even just at the stage of writing it out in your notebook, this idea, think of those three compelling reasons. They might come easy, they might not come easy, but you need to push until you can find those. And then as you sort of allow your product to develop, even after you've launched, it can continually find and dig deeper into more and more compelling reasons to buy. Sharon, thank you so very, very much. All right, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. If you haven't been over there recently, head on over. Check it out. Get onto the email list. There's some cool things happening over there, and I think you'll dig it, you know. I also have Sharon's show notes over there, so I'll link to Sharon on social media, as well as some link to Mobilize, and then some other things about community, see what we can track down, and it will all be there for you. All right. Well, this has been fun. As always, I absolutely appreciate you stopping by. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you're digging it, you can always leave a rating and review wherever it is you're listening to this right now. That also helps. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.